And welcome to another episode of Knights at the Round Table. Tis your boy, Man Wheezy, here in Nashville, chilling with the boy, B-Real, out in LA. What's going on, bruh?
What's going on, dude? Good to see you again.
You too.
It's been like a whole day.
A whole day. If y'all don't know, like, we do this. We're trying to do this every Wednesday and every Thursday of the next, probably the next month or so, and then we're done, because we will successively have, which is, if you're watching this, then you're probably already through a good amount of season 11. We changed up the format a little bit so that we can actually continue dropping episodes every week, because it was difficult because of our schedule to do 1 hour episodes and drop it every week. So we thought 30 minutes, more digestible, easier to, you know, you could do it on a cardio session, you could do it on a drive to work, whatever. So with this, we'll be able to put out episodes all the way till December 19th. And then we'll take a little breaky break, which really is just for December. Now, here's the thing, y'all. Here's the thing. What we're trying to see this year, this is the most important thing. We've hired one of our Patreon members, which, shout out, if you're not aware of Patreon, Patreon is basically a monthly giving thing that you can support us with. If you are feeling what you're seeing, hearing, if this has done anything for you, it's a way to help. And this is not, I'm not pleading for anything, but a lot of people get upset when things go away or no longer exist, and then they never got to support it while it was around. So this is one of those things where it's like, we'll know if we're moving in the right direction by the support that we have, and then, you know, we reevaluate. But Patreon is a way that you can support and help us, and we got to hire an assistant who's literally been killing it, getting all these guests on, which have been absolutely amazing. Like, the guests that are coming that you haven't seen yet, Tim Ross, who does the Upset the Gram, one of our favorite authors, Brian Zahn, who we've spoken of a bunch. We try to get Richard Rohr, but he kindly said no.
He's got a lot on his plate. Like, I feel like Loki's got the universe in his hands. Like,
yo, for real.
Bringing balance to the galaxy.
But we try. We were like, let's go. Let's at least try, which I love Joanna for that. She's just like, I'm going to try and we'll see what happens. So we got like really cool people, and we got to meet yesterday. Last night we had a conversation with the pastor out in Austin, which was super cool. A Restore Church out there in Austin. Super, super cool dude. We enjoyed it. So it's been a fun, fun season. So I'm hoping you guys are digging it. I'm hoping it's a format that you guys appreciate. Show us some love, drop some comments, share with your friends, all that good stuff. Subscribe. We will appreciate it. But speaking of Joanna, she asked you guys, she put out some questions and wanted to know what you guys wanted to know about some current events. And we have some things that we want to talk about. We're going to do an episode. If you haven't seen this, you need to watch it. The documentary of Hillsong Church, which we're going to do a whole episode about. Whoa. We're literally trying to get, which we already had a couple email us that went to the college, and so we're stoked about it. Now, we're not stoked about it, guys, because we're not those people that are like, yes, something bad happened and now we're just going to shit on them. That's not why we're doing it. That's not why we want to have this conversation. We're doing it because it is definitely something prevalent to talk about, because I don't think it's a special or a unique situation. Now,
it's not an anomaly.
No, like, the grandness of a Hillsong is an anomaly, because few churches get that big. But the idea of how hard it is to maintain power and money while you're trying to maintain a relationship with God, like, that crap is hard. And I don't even look at it like, let's talk about how whack it is. Let's just talk about it and really assess what the goals should be moving forward. So anyways, that's coming. But you guys sent some questions that even we didn't really know about, which was kind of interesting. And this first question, sober curious movement. Never knew what that was. I've never heard of
that in my life.
B, read the definition of the sober curious movement.
Yeah, so doing a little digging. And this is interesting because I actually love this now. So whoever brought this up, thank you.
Good on you.
Sober curious movement, it was launched by Ruby Warrington in her book, Sober Curious, late 2018. Essentially, the sober curious movement is a method of being mindful about drinking, right? So it is trying to have a much healthier relationship with alcohol, whether that is completely sober or just like almost sober. Mm. So a lot of people, right, it's either all or nothing. Like they're drinking whenever, whatever. And then there's some people who are just like, no, not touching it at all. And so I think it's with that, it's super important because it's having a mindfulness about one, why are you drinking? What are some triggers that cause you to think, oh, I need to have a drink right now.
Mm.
You know? And then thinking when you were drinking, what need is this fulfilling in you?
Yeah.
Which is super important to kind of be aware of these things, right? And then last but not least, how this adversely affects your life, right? Like this is something now, has it gotten in the way of meaningful relationships in your life? Has it gotten in the way of responsibilities? Are you being cavalier with your finances now? And now alcohol is something that's you're spending way too much on, you know? So all these sorts of things. And it's interesting because for me, I feel like I had a couple rules before knowing about the Sober Curious movement. I've always kind of had a couple rules for myself. One is that I don't drink when I'm sad.
Mm.
I always drink when I am celebrating or when there's other people.
And why so that rule? Why that rule?
Yeah, because you know, it's funny. My great grandmother was an alcoholic. My grandfather was an alcoholic and he ended up getting sober. And he's now, he finished 43 years sober, which is pretty awesome.
Wow.
So people battling addictions in my family has been a thing. So I didn't have my first drink until I was over your guys' house at age 26.
Yeah.
And I had wine for communion, which is, whoa, we're getting edgy out here. And so I kind of adopted, like, I'm not drinking because when I was younger, I was afraid that I would just get addicted.
Mm.
So I knew that, like, if at some point, if I ever start drinking, I know that this thing doesn't have a hold on me because I've now been able to say no in some of the toughest years of saying no, right?
Yeah.
So it's funny because behind me I have drinks. those drinks, if anyone's watched the podcast, they've seen those same drinks there. So it's not even like I'm out here just like, you know, turn up. And so for me, I realize, okay, is there a void that this is trying to fill right now? Mm. I think all of us got crutches in our life that we lean on in moments of feeling lonely, moments of despair, or feeling discouraged, like all those sorts of things. And for people, right, alcohol is one of those things.
Yeah.
Either numbs them, helps them forget about that, you know. And so for me, I just know, like, I don't want anything to get in the way of what is going good in my life.
Yeah.
And alcohol very easily could be that thing that just wrecks all the good stuff that I got going on.
So it's interesting because what you're saying, you know, before, I know growing up in church, we were all kind of taught, if you drink, you're a sinner, you know?
Right, right.
And what you sound like is more so the discussion as a mature Christian is no longer even that, because we knew it, that it wasn't about drinking, but it was about what you just said, like where the drinking took you. So it's, this ain't an issue of, does God love me because I'm drinking? This is
right.
This is a wisdom issue of like, do I act like a freaking fool when I drink?
Yeah.
Like, am I going ham or do I make bad decisions when I drink? Which I don't know any. I used to have a friend that used to say, I drive better when I'm inebriated. And he used to think,
whoa.
He used to think, especially with weed. He's like, oh, when I smoke weed, I'm way more alert. I'm like, that don't sound right, bruh. And of course, he borrowed my car one time and brought it back with a dent in it, but that's neither here nor there. But this guy was trying to convince me that he made better decisions when he was under the influence. So when we're talking about this, y'all, which if you're listening, if you're on the live, drop a comment. Let us know why you drink and when you drink, because we'd love to talk about that. This isn't an issue of, does God love you? This is an issue of, if you can be honest and not bullshit yourself, how do you act when you drink? And if you act out, then it's probably better to tame it or at least have some kind of rule like what you said. Is that the only rule? Yeah. Don't drink when you're sad?
Yeah. And then I usually have, like, if I'm out with people or if I'm here, I usually have a 2-drink limit.
That's smart.
I don't drink to the point where I'm feeling buzzed. Now, there's some drinks that'll come back stronger and you're like, this is one drink. okay, we're going to stop here, you know?
Like Moscato? Right. Bro, and I get lifted off of Moscato, and I don't even have to drink. I drink a quarter of a glass because
just a little sip.
The sugar content, it kills me.
Oh, man. And so, you know, I think more than the question of does God love you? Are you going to go to heaven? Are you still saved if you drink? I think just the practical application of health and wellness in your life.
Yeah.
Right? Drinking a lot of alcohol is not a good thing for your system, mm-hmm. right? It's poisonous. And so I just think like people are starting to become more aware of like health and wellness stuff.
Yeah.
And meditation and all these sorts of things. And I think the sober curious movement, it sounds like it's kind of a good thing.
Yeah.
Like if people and say you take that even beyond that, right? Like, so for people who's taking this in their relationship with alcohol, but just having a more mindfulness approach to all the things that you're doing or all the things that are in your life that you partake of, I just think that's wise.
Yeah.
Right. Like why, like take a look, take inventory of these things that you go to in certain moments, what triggers you to want to reach for that, you know, and being mindful of that, I think is the key in like moving forward and yeah. reaching whatever that is you're going after.
Yeah. It's like most things in the Bible, it's so much more about practicality than spirituality. Like it's just practical things that don't take you having to pray about them. Like if you're an ass, when you drink, you ain't got to ask God, like, take it away. There's
no proverb for that. Stop being an ass.
Stop being an ass, bro. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Garcia says, I was the one that brought it up. Oh, perfect, Garcia. Yeah. Thank you. I'm so glad you guys are talking about it. Okay, Garcia. He says, I no longer drink now. Garcia, maybe. Drop a comment and let us know what you acted like when you did drink. And so we can discuss it. Melanie Castro says, I used to drink frequently, but after self-work / therapeutic shroom experience, alcohol does not sit well in my body anymore. Shroom experience. Thank you for bringing that up, Melanie, because that's another thing that is kind of like, you know, I don't know if you could do it too much, but it's definitely something that people have experienced God in doing shrooms.
Listen, so... like, you know, when we go to Ezekiel's vision in the Bible, right? And he's seeing colors that like he couldn't even describe.
Yeah.
And he's talking about shapes and patterns and stuff. Like that's the typical response to somebody that is on shrooms, right? Like people who have described their experience, it's always like they become so much more aware of what's already happening around them.
Right.
So it's like they look at a moving tree and they're seeing just like everything flow. And colors, right? Like I have some friends who've done shrooms and when they just try to describe the colors that they saw, they can't.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, again, I'm not saying Ezekiel was on, but I am not saying.
Yeah, know? No, like, it could be. And look, it's definitely, this would be one of those things where, you know, and Melanie also answered that. I felt closer to God while on the cycle, you know, and we've had friends that have said the exact same thing. And so I'm definitely not one to say, can or can't, like this isn't a way to access God or not. I go back to what B said about drinking. Why are you doing said thing? Like, what's the real intention? Because if you're trying to escape reality because you hate it and you can't find God in reality, then there's probably a bigger issue if you need this to find God. But if it's someone that's happy and healthy and happens to stumble upon this, then I'm like, I'm really not someone to say you can't find God on shrooms, especially since we have stories that.
And the other interesting thing is, right, like, and I won't get into all the technical things, and I only know very little about it, but in the sense of how it reconnects neural pathways in your brain.
Mm.
So when people are, so there's some people who have found it to be very successful in treating, like, PTSD and processing trauma and stuff, because it helps rewire your actual literal brain. And I think even what Melanie was saying of how she felt closer to God in that, I think that's like so perfectly put, because in a lot of ways it just brings your walls down and you become so aware of what is already happening, what is happening. And that is God. And it's all around.
Yeah.
Right. He's all around, you know? And so it's like anything that can make you more aware of the story that's being written right before our eyes is.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with it. Garcia says, happy drinker, but I was starting to drink more because I was lonely. Like many of us, Garcia, we go to something because of a negative emotion or because of a negative idea of where you're at in life. So it's definitely, I like, and I feel like there's more success in someone just being like, I'm not feeling condemned because I drink or because I did shrooms, because God is aware of my heart in all of this. And compassion comes before this judgment idea. But it's just more of a human discussion with yourself that, why do I do the things I do? And this has to be about everything. Obviously with shrooms and drinking, there's, it's like maybe a hot button issue, and you know, you may think we're crazy or unsaved, but I really think it's about anything and everything. So this sober yeah. curious movement, I think it should be like a sober in a lot of things, sober in relationships. Because a lot yeah. of people, Garcia, instead of drinking, a lot of people just fall into more relationships because they're lonely. Like, yeah. it's not even about a relationship that's pushing them forward, and they don't think that they can marry this person, but they are not sober-minded in love. They're just falling into the next person, like
yeah.
you would fall into the next drink. And yeah. so the idea of being sober curious, I think in every area of your life, there needs yeah. to be an inner dialogue of why. And it's not without the attached shame.
Because right.
the shame fucks it up for all of us. Because then we start thinking God is thinking like we think.
Yeah.
He's mad at us. He's shamed. You know, we're shamed. Oh, man, we keep doing this or doing that. And I'm like, once I lost that theology of like God is so mad at me for being the human that he created me.
Yeah.
I stopped feeling shame and condemnation. Mm-hmm. And I stopped doing that whole, oh, I'm not getting this because I'm a sinner. You know, I stopped thinking all that. I started thinking way more practically like, hey, man, if you engage in this, how does that affect your human experience? Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't affect God. Like, he yeah. already did his thing. He's not affected by the human experience. Like, he's done with that. But it does affect your human experience. So yeah. if you end up going down certain ways and it messes you up, it's not God that's like, I'm pissed at you. It's more like you cannot connect with God because you feel unworthy of it. So it's yeah. a whole different vibe now.
It's like, it's truly a disconnect. Cause like, you know, I even think about when I was growing up in church, right? We were taught the Romans road, right? And you go through all of the verses and yeah. you know, one of the first ones is for the wages of sin is death.
Yeah.
You know? And when you think about that, it's like, when we make bad decisions, like the consequence of that, God excluded, like God's not in the equation.
Right.
It's like harmful things will be kind of as a result of harmful decisions.
Yeah.
Like it's its own punishment, excluding God, excluding the devil, right? Just it is. And you know, one of the things that's interesting is I was at an Easter service, which was really cool, actually. It was at New Abbey over in Glendale down here, which our boy William, he leads worship there. And the pastor, he had spoken, you know, of course, on just kind of like Holy Week, which is pretty cool, right? To not just emphasize like the resurrection of Jesus, which is so powerful, but to also highlight Holy Saturday, which is this weird in-between. And a lot of people sitting in questions and pain and all these sorts of things and hoping things turn out okay. But one of the things he was talking about was with the resurrected Christ, it's not just this event that happened thousands of years ago, where an actual physical Jesus, you know, got out of the grave. But in the way that we continue to press on when things get hard, in the way that we continue to choose to love again when our heart got broken, in the way that we choose to dream again after the last one got shattered, in the way we choose to forgive each other and love each other, that's where we see the resurrected Christ.
Mm, yeah.
Right? So the resurrected Christ is constantly being put on display. So, you know, you take that, for the wages of sin is death, which is like this like very bad thing. And then when you choose this other way, it's like resurrection, right? Mm. Death and resurrection are the two opposites. And so I think like as believers is taking away the shame and the mistakes that we're making and just choosing to live out the resurrection in our life.
Yeah.
And again, and on a practical level, not just this ethereal, like, you know, I got to pray in tongues and sing the best worship song now, but like, hey, choosing to believe the best about that person.
Yeah.
This is me putting the resurrected Christ on display.
Man, I think, and that's so practical, y'all. It's so, what's the word? Easy. Like I used to think Christianity was hard. when I was out there struggling. And the reason it was hard, because I felt like the message of, oh, sin is missing the mark. Sin is missing the mark. So if you're not perfect, you're in sin. And if you're in sin, God is mad at you. Blessings can get taken away. Things that happen bad are because you're a sinner. Yeah. And it would wreck me. Like, I didn't feel worthy to do or be anyone. And I was always afraid of people finding out who I really was, which was a freaking sinner. Mm. And now when I just break it down on the most practical, simplistic level, just like we talked about for Sober Curious Movement.
Yeah.
God is not mad because I drunk too much.
Yeah.
God is sad because when I drink too much, I'm an ass and I hurt people and I hurt myself. That feels way more in line with the resurrected Christ than he's mad and he's going to smite me.
Yeah.
And it's so practical. Now all you got to think of, okay, it's not God that's mad. It's my best friend. It's the bridges that I burned. It's my alcoholism taking over my life. And now I don't have people that love me, which that can feel like God has taken away his hand on you.
Yeah.
Because
that feels like its own hell.
Yeah. You're living in a hell that you created. Yeah. And like people of the past, if you're into Roman and Greek mythology, whenever their life was going shitty, they never looked at their decisions. They were like, the gods have done this to me.
The gods have cursed us. The plants aren't growing.
Yeah. And it's like, that's what
water
we
that
do.
Water that seed, yo. Yeah.
Water the seed. So it's like, you know, masturbation. I get it, bruh. You may think that God hates you. Doesn't hate you. But if you masturbate a whole lot and you can't get it up with a real person, that's going to be a bad situation for you. And God is not out there like, told you so. He's more like, man, I'm sorry. For whatever reason, you felt like you had to engage in this at this amount that now it has left you impotent.
Yeah.
Let's address what it is that was behind it all. I ain't mad at you for the thing. I'm concerned with, hey, what's wrong? Like, what's really wrong? And when you look at it like that, it's like, oh, he's just more concerned about me living this heaven on earth thing than like condemning me to hell on earth.
Yeah.
That's just where we're at.
It is. You know, I always say this in my head when people like, you know, because down here in LA, we got some crazy drivers.
Sure.
And, you know, there are some people who feel very strongly about things on the road, and you'll get a lot of things. And even at the grocery store, like, people are just constantly in a rush all the time.
Yeah.
Right. So you cut in line and all of a sudden it's like, you know, they're just launching a whole world war on you, you know? And it's funny because in those sort of situations where people really blow up, you realize there's something bigger happening. And jokingly years ago, me and my friend, we used to always be like, don't you wish you could just go to that person and say, hey, tell me where it hurts.
Yeah.
Tell me where it hurts. But as a joke, but now I actually take it serious. Like, and I think about that in my own life. Like, I think about in the moments of weakness, in the moments of where I'm reaching out for something that I shouldn't, and the, you know, that I was acting harshly towards somebody else. And I just think, oh no. But also at the same time, I feel like it's an invitation from God. It's like, tell me where it hurts.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like he's always addressing the need. He's never addressing like the bad character. And he's just like, listen, or not bad character, but the bad decision. Right.
Right.
He's constantly like, let's get to the root of this so we can live in wholeness. Right. And another way of looking at holiness, which I heard holiness messages my entire life. And, you know, everyone's like, you know, God, he tells you to consecrate yourself and to be holy. And I think another way to look at that is, obviously holiness is H-O-L-I-N-E-S-S. Another way to look at holiness is wholeness, mm-hmm. W-H-O-L-N-E-S-S. And thinking of like, what are all the ways that our spirit, our heart, our mind can be in wholeness? Because that is what God is like. And that's what he's constantly trying to get us towards, right?
Yeah.
So
I love that. And that kind of leads into the next question that you guys asked, which, keep dropping comments, y'all, if you want us to read it. We want you to be a part of the conversation. I would like to know, this is a question, I don't know who it is. I would like to know how you take care of yourself when current events are overwhelming. This maybe feels like someone who's highly in tune with social issues and things mm-hmm. that are going on, it feels like that question is coming from that place, because I know there's so many social issues that, man, as much as you like to think that you could be or have a calm conversation about it, it ain't happening. It ain't happening. And the social issues that are that I feel are predominantly bum rushing the stage right now. Obviously, we're getting ready for an election, so the idea of Trump running again is definitely going to be a thing. And I'm really curious. I'm really curious how the church handles this second go. Like, I'm really curious. Yeah. I want to like, and I never looked or cared.
Because, okay, so we'll know, right? So 81% of evangelicals voted for him.
Yeah.
So we're going to see. But the interesting thing is since that time, there's been a diminishing a number of actually evangelicals in this country.
Yeah.
So, it's at one point, which was felt like a very strong majority, is now slowly becoming a minority. And the thing that's going to fuck them up is Generation Z.
Yeah.
Gen Z is going to operate in the far extreme of where it is.
Yeah.
And this thing is going to go that direction. But anyways, back to the thing of being overwhelmed. One of the things, like this last election, I just remember feeling so stressed out all the time with all the news. I had Twitter updates all the time. I was watching the news, I was reading articles, and I found my heart feeling just anxious about it all.
Yeah.
Like, and in a way, and then in the same way, my heart feeling like charged, like just getting pissed off about everything. And there came a point where I forgot where it was. It was either early morning or late night, one of the two. Sometimes those blend together. And those are where those, like, where everything's quiet and you just have this, like, very just sober thought. Mm. And I just thought, what good is this doing in my life?
Yeah.
Like, for me to have all of this knowledge of what's going on politically. Now, again, I do vote, by the way. Like, I think it's super important. Go and vote, right? So I'm not saying just completely back up. But at the same time, too, I realized this isn't having an actual positive effect on my life. So it might be time for me to turn some of this off.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's super wise. Like, it's beyond the election season coming, you know, the charged situations that we continually have, which a number 7 person showed up here. I'm so glad. Whoever you are that just joined, we'd love to hear from you. Drop a comment. Guns, everybody, and I didn't know this, like when that shooting happened here in Nashville, like I didn't even know what happened. My old neighbor Joan, who I love her to death, 90 something years old, she's like texting me updates while I'm in LA. Wow. And I didn't know. Now, obviously, Tennessee is very pro-gun, and I know this isn't a debate, an issue that I just don't know, or I have not seen a situation where it's been spoken about with cooler heads. Natalie made it to the live, finally. We love you, Natalie. Oh, number 8, somebody else joined. Say hi. I can have a conversation about it because I'm not, I don't think I know the answer. I really don't. I do think I have an opinion, but I don't think that my opinion would or should overstep somebody else's feeling that they need to, you know, have a gun. Now, I thought about this, and this is the first time I ever had an opinion about gun control because it's all happening around me. Like, what that happened, it was like a mile from my house. And so, and having a baby, I'm about to have a baby. So I got to think about shit. I got to send my little girl out into this world. The original idea, which even my boy said, he's like, man, we're supposed to have this gun in the case that we need to overthrow the government. That was the whole thing of like, we need to be able to bear arms so that we can fight against governmental rule or a situation like a king or usurping, trying to like, be authoritarian government.
Right.
And so, or if somebody else came and tried to attack us.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that that reason is whack, but what I am saying is if our government, which is the most powerful army ever created in the history of the world, if they wanted to overthrow us, or if they wanted to come after you, I don't care how many AR-15s you have. It does not matter when they can send a little drone in the night and blow your whole shit up. You wouldn't even know it's coming if our if our army waged war against us.
Yeah.
They would demolish us.
They wouldn't even need to come to you.
No.
They would just be drones. Just
freaking
you out.
Like freaking Xbox.
Night-night.
Night-night. We're sleeping. ARs are all locked away. Like, I don't even think that's a good argument. If, you know, if maybe if another government landed on American soil and freaking and everybody had to wage war, I feel like at that point, the government will be handing out guns like fucking candy. Like, yo, this is real. It's never happened. Another country touched down on American soil and they're approaching.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be a movie, which somebody would probably do a movie about this.
Isn't that Red Dawn?
No, but I think they were in another country. But if somebody came to our country, I think the government would be handing out guns like crazy. Like, you take one, you take one. Yeah. Let's fight, all hands on deck. Yeah. So I think the reasons of that, the more realistic reason I think would be, you know, protecting your house, which I cannot get mad at somebody for wanting to do that. I can't.
Dude, but even then, like, just as we're filming this today, today is April the 20th, right? Shout out 420, all you guys who are token. But,
hey,
dude, I mean, even just a day ago, there's three high school girls got killed because they pulled up in the wrong driveway.
Yeah. And right? The little boy that got killed because he rung the wrong doorbell.
Like, it's crazy. Like, if you look up, I just Googled shooting that happened, right? AP News, which I don't know anything about that news source. They literally have a whole section.
That's the Associated Press. That's a big source. My sister works for them.
Just for shootings.
So shit.
It just has like Americans, and I will say this too, Christian Americans' fascination and devotion to guns is just flat out bizarre. It's just weird.
It is interesting because I'm just trying to find, I think, and I don't know if it's like malicious. Number nine came and went. Drop a comment if you guys have an opinion.
Nah.
If you have like an opinion on this gun thing, drop a comment because we love to read it. I think, you know, I heard someone say, like, we have a right, or we have a God-given right to defend our family.
Yeah.
I've heard that so much. Yeah. And then I look at God in the Word, and when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, that would have been the one time for him to defend his family. That would have been it. Those were his homies, his disciples. Like, y'all roll with me. If somebody comes after you, I got you. Like, they got to fight me. You know, the whole adage, they got to go through me before they get to you.
Yeah.
And Jesus was like, nah, bruh.
And then even when the disciple cuts off the ear, he essentially like rebukes him in that sense. And he's like, hey, we're not going to handle this thing the way of Caesar. And the way of Caesar and the way of empire is constantly using violence to restore order, which is in this, it's kind of nestled in this power dynamic where you're at the top and others are below you.
Yeah.
And Jesus adopts the way of nonviolence, right? Like, if you really, really want to take Jesus serious and what he talks about in his lifestyle, you will see reading scripture, this was a nonviolent man.
Yeah.
So,
and it's hard though to then, like, cause I think about my friends who have the guns and I almost feel like the feeling is the human side of you gets a pass when it comes to this, because who of us can really sit back and take the road of nonviolence if somebody is assaulting someone we love? So that's why I stop when I'm like, Jesus was this. But then I think, okay, Manny, man breaks into your house. He's trying to rape Angela and trying to kill your baby girl. What do you do? Do you pray for him? Do you say, in Jesus' name, I rebuke you? Or do you pick up the closest fucking thing and go ham?
Dismantle him.
Like, I'm going ham. At that moment, my humanity is saying, I am not Christian enough. I am not Christ-like enough to pick up the ear and put it back on the dude. I am Christ-like enough to probably shoot off some warning shots.
You like Jesus, but you'll still punch a hoe. I got it.
Like, you know, shoot in the air. Like, those are my Christ-like warnings. Like, I'm shooting in the air. I don't want to shoot you.
Yeah.
But the human in me understands other humans and being like, if it's me or you, it has to be you. And so that's why I never get in front of this gun debate, because I'm like, there's too many scenarios that you can put me in that I would pick, okay, it has to be them.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel a certain type of way, because I'm openly admitting, Jesus, I can't nor want to be like you in this moment.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if I could live with it. I don't know if I would be comforted enough if I just sat there and let my wife get killed and my daughter. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know a world where I'd be like, people ask me, why don't you do anything? And I'm just like, you know, because the Lord is a peacemaker. I don't even know if I believe myself. And I don't know how to contend with that, to be honest. Thanks so much, y'all, for listening to part one of this episode. We appreciate it greatly. Hey, like and subscribe if you guys are feeling this. Share it with your friends. We appreciate it so much. Please come back next week for part two. Love you. Ha ha ha.